Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, participants are in a listen-only mode until today's question and answer session. To ask a question at that time, please press star then one and state your name and company when prompted. Today's conference is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Michelle Bonds. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, operator, and thank you all for joining us today for the release of the new CDC Vital Signs. We are joined by the CDC Director, Dr. Brenda Fitzgerald, as well as Robert Merritt, Chief of the Epidemiology and Surveillance Branch in the CDC Division of Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention, and the lead author of the Science article, Dr. Xuanhe Yang, also with the Division of Heart Disease and Stroke Prevention. Dr. Fitzgerald is unable to remain with us through the entire telebriefing, but following the brief remarks, Dr. Ann Sheckett, CDC Principal Deputy, Mr. Merritt, and Dr. Yang will take your questions. Thank you. Dr. Fitzgerald?
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. CDC provides the common defense of the country against health threats. Each month in our Vital Signs report, we focus on a disease from the front line and give you information to help stop it. Today's report contains new information about stroke, a leading cause of death nationwide. And what our report reveals is a slowdown in progress after decades of decreasing stroke deaths. We are also seeing more strokes happen in certain populations, including Hispanics, Blacks, and people living in the South. This is an important wake-up call. The majority of strokes we see are avoidable, and we know how to prevent them. Every 40 seconds in the United States, someone has a stroke, and more than 140,000 people die from it each year. It also costs the nation $34 billion annually. Some of you on this call may have experienced a stroke firsthand or lost a loved one. I myself lost a friend and colleague, Senator Paul Coverdale, who died unexpectedly in 2000 at the too early age of 61 from a massive stroke. His legacy now continues through the CDC's Paul Coverdale National Acute Stroke Program, which you will hear more about later in this call. We at CDC know that health providers are on the front lines of stroke prevention efforts, and we are committed to giving doctors, patients, and state and local health departments the information they need to help improve outcomes. I realize this is a big undertaking, and I say this from experience as a health commissioner in Georgia, a state in the heart of the stroke belt, where we have taken major steps in recent years to improve care for stroke patients, both in the hospital and also before and after they get there. More than 60 hospitals now participate in the Georgia Coverdale Acute Stroke Registry Program, from primary stroke centers to local hospitals and health departments serving rural areas, all working together to help improve the stroke system of care. In Georgia, we saw good results early in these efforts, with evidence indicating fewer stroke deaths in participating hospitals between 2008 and 2013, especially among those hospitals providing the highest level of care. Unfortunately, this vital sign shows a recent reversal in some of Georgia's progress. And across the nation, stroke death progress has stalled in 3 out of 4 states. This is alarming, and we are working hard to find out what led to the change. We know that the rising rates of diabetes and prediabetes, high cholesterol, and other chronic conditions are taking a toll. For example, more than one-third of the adults are now obese, and one-third have high blood pressure. These are very disturbing trends. This new information shows that more middle-aged adults, those ages 35 to 64, are having strokes, and we are seeing more of them with these chronic risk factors that contribute to stroke, like high blood pressure, lipid disorders, diabetes, and obesity. So it's clear that we have work to do to reduce this burden. There is no one answer. It will take all of us, public health, health systems, doctors, nurses, and healthcare professionals, to work together to make sure this short-term trend of a decrease does not become a long-term one. We have made great progress in reducing stroke deaths over the past few decades, but this report shows that it's time to increase our efforts. We cannot afford to be complacent when so many deaths could be prevented. I will now ask Mr. Merritt, the epidemiologist, to share more details from today's report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Fitzgerald. I'm joined by the lead author of this study, Dr. Xuanher Yang, who will be on hand for the question and answer portion of this telebriefing. For this vital science report, we analyzed stroke deaths between 2000 and 2015 to determine the changes and trends in stroke death rates. From 2000 to 2013, stroke death rates decreased by an estimated 4% each year. Stroke death rates declined 38% from 118.4 per 1,000 people in 2000 to 73.3 per 100,000 in 2015. In 2013, the decline in stroke death rates began to stall, and from 2013 through 2015, the decline in stroke death rates stalled in 38 states. A reversal in stroke death rates was seen among certain subpopulations in geographic areas. The South, which includes the stroke belt, saw a 4% increase in the stroke death rate each year from 2013 to 2015. However, we also found increases in many states outside of the South. There were disparities among demographic groups. For example, Hispanics experienced a 6% increase in their stroke death rate each year from 2013 to 2015. African Americans, who traditionally are the hardest hit by stroke, continued to have the highest death rate compared to other race and ethnic groups. And despite popular belief, strokes don't only impact older people. Our data show an increasing number of middle-aged adults having strokes, which can cause lifelong disability. Although these findings are concerning, there are many things that can be done to reverse this trend. For example, health systems can use system-wide approaches to find patients with undiagnosed or unmanaged stroke risk factors. They can also work with emergency medical systems to quickly identify strokes and get patients to the hospital quickly. These health systems can also implement a coordinated system of care that efficiently treats patients from the first symptom of a stroke through recovery. Doctors, nurses, and other healthcare professionals also play a vital role. They can help patients control their blood pressure by taking medicines as directed and making lifestyle changes that help prevent stroke. This includes helping patients manage stroke risks and referring them to community resources such as smoking quit lines and obesity and diabetes prevention programs. They can also educate patients on the signs and symptoms of stroke and the importance of calling 911 right away if someone is having a stroke. People can prevent strokes, and prevention at any age begins with managing important risk factors. This includes maintaining a healthy blood pressure, managing cholesterol and diabetes, and stopping smoking. Also, following a healthy diet and exercising regularly. We also must know the signs and symptoms of stroke to help ourselves and others. One strategy is to act fast, as in F-A-S-T. F stands for facial drooping, A stands for arm weakness, S stands for speech difficulties, and T stands for time, which means it's time to call 911 since a stroke is a health emergency. Reducing stroke deaths is a priority for the federal government. Two national efforts focus on this include the Paul Coverdale National Acute Stroke Program, which Dr. Fitzgerald referenced earlier, and the Million Hearts Initiative. The Million Hearts Initiative aims to prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes by 2022 by keeping people healthy, optimizing clinical care, and focusing efforts on priority populations. The Coverdale Program partners with state health departments, emergency medical systems, and hospitals to use data-driven quality improvement strategies to deliver high-quality stroke care. State health departments, for example, can use data to identify gaps and improve quality of stroke care. They can also train emergency medical staff to identify the signs of stroke and understand the importance of getting patients to the hospital quickly. CDC continues to research stroke treatment, recovery, and prevention. We also support the National Institute of Health's Mind Your Risks public education campaign to increase awareness of the importance of brain health and the connection between high blood pressure and dementia. By linking the efforts of health systems, state and local health departments, individuals, and the coordinated efforts of the federal government, we can resume our progress in reducing stroke deaths. With an estimated 800,000 strokes occurring each year and 1 in 20 adult deaths due to stroke, we must work together to protect Americans' health. Thank you very much, and I turn it back to our moderator.
Thank you. Operator, we are ready for questions.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star, then 1, and state your name when prompted. If you'd like to withdraw your question, please press star 2. The first question comes from Mike Stobe of Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. I had a couple questions regarding stroke. What happened in 2013? Why was 2013 the turning point, do you all think? Also, the Paul Coverdell program has been in place for a while, but we saw this increase in the South. Did it not work, or can you speak a little bit more to what that did and didn't accomplish and why we saw this recent trend? And lastly, could you address the hurricane? What's the condition of the CDC campus in Puerto Rico? Are personnel okay? And what are the plans and issues that CDC and HHS are planning for? Are you planning to deploy Commissioned Corps, or what are you planning for in the days ahead? Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to ask Mr. Merritt to start us off with the first question, and Dr. Yang will follow.
Thank you for your question. Well, I think clearly you have noted that something happened in 2013. Yeah, we were observing a very steady decline in stroke death rates from 2000 to 2013, and saw a slowing and then a reversal in some of the subpopulations. My explanation for that would be what we mentioned in our opening comments, which is a continued struggle in this country with risk factors, with increasing rates of hypertension, high cholesterol, obesity, diabetes, physical inactivity. If we can control those, I think that will continue to work in favor for a continued decline. However, there are the two other system-related issues that I think are of concern, and that is the, difficulty people have of recognizing the signs and symptoms of having a stroke, or their reluctance to seek care. So I think we have a real opportunity to educate the public and our providers around that particular protocol. So I think that's really, the likely explanation for what we're seeing. And if you look at some of the subpopulations, particularly the younger adults that Dr. Fitzgerald mentioned, we are watching that group in particular because they have concerning rates of all those risk factors. Dr. Yang, did you want to add anything to that?
Yes, we see this stroke death rate increase significantly among the southern census states, which is this southern census states contains 8 of 11 stroke, what we call the stroke belt states. And in those states, usually have the higher stroke death rates overall. So, but this time we see it is the southern death rates is much larger than only the 8 stroke belt states. Many factors may contribute to this change, why we see the significant increase in southern states. Like in the southern states, we have higher than average stroke risk factors. We have higher than average, lower than average socioeconomic status. We also see higher prevalence of poor diets. Those things coming together probably explain why the southern states' stroke tax rate increased. And then that's why this is the wake-up call. Please remember, 80% of a stroke are preventable, and everybody can help to prevent the stroke death and prevent the stroke from happening. What we do is two simple things. One, adopting healthy lifestyle. and then control your, manage control your risk factors, like don't smoke, eating healthy, and then maintain your health rates. If you have conditions, keep them under control, like high blood pressure, and then diabetes or obesity, and then they just tackle medication, keep them in control. This procedure, simple procedure, we're preventing more people from getting stroke. But the very important is we have to, everyone can help to recognize the signs of the stroke. So the signs of stroke is mentioned is the simple words like FAST, face, arms, speak, and also time. Stroke is a real medical emergency. See these signs, call 911, get people to the hospital, they will save lives.
Second question about Coverdale.
Sure.
So I want to address your second question, which is was in regard to the Paul Coverdale National Acute Stroke Program. Yes, you're right, the program has been around a long time, but you must keep in mind that we have not funded all 50 states with this program. We have been very fortunate to have resources to fund selected states over the years and evolution of this program, and we've seen great improvements in the system of care approach, which basically takes us from the pre-hospital to the hospital and the post-hospital setting. And the program evolved over time from just focusing in on hospital improvements to really engaging EMS, to engaging rehab, to engaging your primary care physician after you're discharged. It's a very different way of approaching stroke care. So I think, the systemic changes are being made. We've seen the advances in TPA, the clot-busting drugs. All those things are very good. But again, if the risk factors remain high, people don't call 911 when they have a stroke, it's going to offset all those good things that are going on. So, we're very proud of the Coverdale program and have very, very promising results from all of our states.
Hi, this is Ann Shook at responding on the hurricane front. Of course, CDC is part of the U.S. government response both to Hurricane Harvey and preparedness and response Hurricane Irma. As you mentioned, we have an installation in Puerto Rico that's really been the epicenter of our Zika response. We're in close contact with staff there, and people are fine. We're, of course, wanting to make sure that we can be part of the response wherever it's needed. The Commission Corps, including staff from CDC, have been part of the response to Harvey and are on standby for other assistance. And if additional details are needed, our press office can help. Just because we're talking about strokes today, I do want to remind people in terms of preparedness, make sure you have your medications with you, and continuity of care for things like high blood pressure can help keep you healthy during response to a hurricane or if you have to suddenly relocate. We know a number of CDC staff have been assisting family members in making sure they can get to safe places. Controlling your blood pressure on good days and bad days is important.
Thank you, Dr. Shuckett. Next question, please.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then one. The next question comes from Tom Corwin of the Augusta Chronicle. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just spoke to a stroke survivor, a young stroke survivor this morning, who would be, I think, a classic example of what you are talking about. He's 43, had the classic symptoms, woke up and weakness on the right side, couldn't speak. His family knew enough to call an ambulance, but he didn't realize it was serious until the ambulance hit the sirens, and he thought, oh, well, this is serious. Had no idea he was having a stroke. He's in that 35 to 64 age group where you're seeing a lot of these excess deaths, and yet he still didn't know he was at risk. He's very fit, but he had high cholesterol. He didn't know he's at risk. Is there a need to maybe change the messaging so that this population is getting the message that they're at risk?
Sure. This is Robert Merritt. I think it gives us an opportunity to do a lot of things in this age group. I think it's unfortunate that, even though this individual was partaking in behaviors that one would think would lead to not having a stroke, I think there are other issues, too, and that is, family history plays into this a little bit, too, and we do encourage people to understand the family history of heart disease and stroke because it is relevant to how you approach the entire, your entire lifestyle approach to health. So, yes, I would agree that maybe the messages, we need to take the messages where these individuals are. We need to make these messages resonate with these folks. This particular age group, men in particular, don't utilize health services like they probably should. We have an opportunity there. We also have an opportunity to, just reiterate, the two main components of this, which, again, are the controlling the risk factors as well as, using this as an example to educate people on why it's important to call 911 and how time-critical and time-sensitive this is. So, yes, we welcome the opportunity and we'll take advantage of the opportunity through both our programs to address this age group.
Thank you.
The next question.
If you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star then one. Again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. Currently, there are no questions in queue.
Okay. Thank you, Drs. Fitzgerald, Merritt, and Yang for joining us today, as well as the reporters. For follow-up questions, please call our press office at 639-3286. Or send emails to media@cdc.gov. Thank you for joining us. This concludes our call.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. Participants, you may disconnect. Speakers, please stand by.